Begin after six taps. One, two, three, four, five, six.
Happy New Year, everyone. And thank you for listening to the FlixWise podcast. I'm your host, Lady P, no relation to Master P. And today we have a special episode. It's going to be a 2014 year in review. We're going to look back at some of the best or most notable movie and television releases from last year. And helping me fill this time capsule are two of my favorite returning guests. First up, we have the author of the film Experiences, A Year with Kate series, Anne Marie Kelly.
Hi.
And FlixWise's art director, Miss Emma Gorald.
Hello.
I like to say your name with a lot of flourish.
So I would say too.
2014, like most years, was a mixed bag. Where to begin?
Hit him.
Well, for starters, this is the year that podcasts hit it big. Not only did that Sarah Koenig lady make a splash with Serial, but this was the year that FlixWise started playing in earbuds across the world. And, yeah, really beyond that, everything else is icing, you know? Right, guys?
Right.
Yeah. But just in case, let's see if we can recall anything else of note. We played both Hunger and Imitation Games. We watched a funny-looking man named Mr. Turner paint for a couple of hours. We learned about the mysteries of the universe and the still greater mysteries of the human heart in the theory of everything. Marion Cotillard had us feeling very sorry for her in not one, but two films. Just imagine how much harder her life would be if she weren't stunningly beautiful. I shudder to think. Speaking of stunningly beautiful, we may or may not have caught a glimpse of Ben Affleck's manhood in Gone Girl. And if creepy dudes are your thing, Steve Carell and Jake Gyllenhaal offered up a pair of doozies in Foxcatcher and Nightcrawler, respectively. On the book front, Roz Chaz implored us to talk about something more pleasant. There were girl bosses and bad feminists. There was a giant, prestigious text by a French economist that will linger unopened on many a nightstand for years to come. Rest assured, there were plenty of blockbusters, or wannabe blockbusters. We hung out with Tom Cruise on the edge of tomorrow. We got second go-arounds of time-traveling superheroes and X-Men Days of Future Past and Captain America Winter Soldier. Not to mention all the other sequels that came out this year. Here's just a handful. The Amazing Spider-Man 2, How to Train Your Dragon 2, Sin City, A Dame to Kill For, 22 Jump Street, Horrible Bosses 2, Dumb and Dumber 2. Suddenly A Million Ways to Die in the West doesn't seem so bad, does it? However, there is good news. We finally put the Hobbit series out of its misery, so at least we won't see another one of those for a while. Or at least until New Line runs out of money. We went wild and into the woods, and then out of the woods, and then we shook it off. And we wrote names in blank spaces. And that's too many Taylor Swift references for one intro. Especially since I don't really intend to talk too much about the music that came out this year. What I do intend to talk about are my favorite movies and television shows of the year. So, without further ado, shall we get into our top five list?
Yeah.
Okay, so we're going to list them top five.
In no particular order.
No particular order, okay.
Although, you're right, it was a good year for music, and I kept listening to the soundtrack of my first movie over and over again, which was The Only Lovers Left Alive.
Nice.
Yes.
Tilda.
I finally got the Tom Hiddleston thing. Yes. There's Tilda Swinton in it, mm-hmm. which I already got.
Yeah.
The soundtrack was great. It was about vampires. It was also just kind of about life and how to enjoy it.
Yeah.
And it doesn't hurt that they also went to Tangier at the end. So definitely top five.
Yeah.
My second one arbitrarily picked, I picked The Double.
Okay.
Which is, if you don't know, Richard Iowati's comedy based on a Dostoevsky novel or novella, I think. I think he's really good at just doing kind of synthesis of things he likes. And there's a lot of Terry Gilliam and Wong Kar-wai and just hilariousness in it. And
yeah.
It's a little bit of like Singaporean pop music from the 60s.
All right.
And it's also funny, so.
My list will mostly be films that are available for streaming, because that's how I watch most things. And I am ashamed to admit that has been on my Netflix queue since like the beginning of the year, and I haven't actually sat down to watch it.
I was lucky enough to see it at the New Art. Thanks, New Art.
Oh, the New Art.
My next one is Birdman, which I know was not your favorite.
I liked it okay.
But
stunning praise indeed. Yes.
It was the perfect level of, like, you know, Roland Barthes jokes and weird camera trickery and Emma Stone being adorable and just coolness for me. And I think there's not enough magic realism in Western cinema, so
I'm giving thumbs up right now. Yes, agreed.
My next one is Cavalry. Nice. One of the McDonoughs. I can't remember which one his name is right now. And if you like those kind of, like, snappy dialogue, mystery, like, sort of general, non-continental European.
Yeah.
Yeah. lots of great performances in it. Oh, you know it? And it's a mystery where the detective knows who did it, but we don't. And I don't think I've seen that before. Ooh. That was fun. And my last one is Nymphomaniac.
Wow.
I'm just counting one and two as one movie.
Okay. You know, Entertainment Weekly said that was the worst movie of the year.
Well, Entertainment Weekly says a lot of things.
That's true.
Maybe Entertainment Weekly is afraid of Charlotte Gainsbourg's vagina.
That
could be. I don't know.
I'm sure they're not the only ones.
I haven't
Maybe
watched...
they're afraid of Shia LaBeouf's penis. That seems more likely.
It's been a great year for Shia LaBeouf stuff, too. I was not interested in him at all before. Now I'm, like, watching that YouTube video of him getting Starbucks in Paris, and I'm, like, fascinating.
Did you see the YouTube video about Shia LaBeouf? The musical about Shia LaBeouf?
Yes.
Like a giant
real-life cannibal Shia LaBeouf.
Real-life cannibal Shia LaBeouf.
Oh, God. Please don't let 2014 be the year of Shia LaBeouf.
It might be.
Was that the problem with this year?
That was probably it. I mean, I don't know. On the whole, I think it was a pretty solid year for everything. But there's just this lingering sadness.
It wasn't a great year for human life.
That too.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
For the arts, I think it was a pretty good year.
Yeah.
I guess,
What does that say?
Yeah.
Art out of chaos. Yeah, that's what
that
says.
Exactly. All right. Anne-Marie, top five.
All right.
Are yours in alphabetical order? And I think you should go ahead and be bold and rank them.
All right. I will rank them then.
Okay.
This was a really good year for weird. I mean that as a compliment. It was a really good year for movies that work outside the conventional box to have a place and be seriously discussed. And I didn't see all of them because I was a little busy, you know, working my way from 1932 to 1994. But I did get time to see some. So my number one, and my list is not necessarily movies that I think are the absolute best of the year, although I have very soft spots for all of them. They're movies that I think people should be watching and talking about more. So my number five is the silliest one.
Okay, perfect.
My number five is The Lego Movie, because it is a movie that did not deserve to be as good as it is. From the premise and from the idea of a large toy company being like, yes, give us a blockbuster movie. That's how we got the Transformers movies.
Exactly.
Like, it had no right to be as funny, as witty, as subversive as it was. And there's no way in hell that the next one is going to be as good, judging from how 22 Jump Street felt as opposed to 21 Jump Street. It's
okay.
The same creators. But I was genuinely surprised, and I'm also under duress because I have to say that because my roommate owns it and watches it about once a week.
Wow. Are you sick of it yet?
Oddly, I'm not, which okay. I got sick of the Dark Knight trilogy by the time that my roommate got it on Blu-ray. So that does also say something for the humor for it.
Okay.
It's also one of my biggest pet peeves, and one of the things that I hope we're moving away from now is this drained color that we're seeing in movies. Like, everything in order to be realistic or gritty or a blockbuster of in any way has to have all of the color sapped out of it, even into the woods. Like, there is very, very little color. Let's make everything steel gray. Let's make everything look like it's constantly overshadowed.
Right.
And that was awful.
Right.
So the Lego
Muted
movies...
equals serious equals prestigious.
Exactly. And there's nothing prestigious about robot Transformers beating each other up on robot dinosaurs.
Right.
So to have a movie unapologetically also optimistic and brightly colored and just silly was such a relief.
Yeah.
So that was why the Lego Movie was my number five. My number four is Obvious Child with Jenny Slate, which you can also, I think, find on video on demand now. It was one I came to really late in the game because I kept going, you know, it just looks like one of those, you know, fluffy little, let's pay attention to me indie comedies. Mm-hmm. But I was genuinely surprised by how intelligent it was and how incredibly good Jenny Slate was in it. I don't have much more to say about it. That one has actually kind of been talked to death. But if you haven't seen it, go see it, because this was a really good year for women on film in that specific area.
Yes.
And who makes a comedy about abortion? Like, who makes a romantic comedy about abortion?
I know. Doesn't seem like an area ripe for comedy, but, you know, God bless them. They
also
managed.
Also, it gave me an excuse to blast Paul Simon through the apartment for, like, 2 weeks straight. So, never going to complain about that.
Exactly.
My number three was Snowpiercer.
Okay. Wow.
Which I actually saw on the 4th of July. Because really, nothing says America like going to get pho and then watching Snowpiercer.
That's the America I love. I don't know.
Feel a little guilty on 4th of July. I feel like you're not doing it right.
Well, it was also the weekend. I'm going to keep harping on this because this ticks me off so much. It's the weekend that Transformers 4 opened and became like one of the highest grossing films in the world. And that ticks me off so much because if you're going to have an action-y sci-fi blockbuster, Snowpiercer is a much better choice. Partially because of Tilda Swinton.
Tilda Swinton.
Tilda, be the shoe. And just because it's what I believe science fiction should be, which is a really strong allegory and a really strong commentary on what's happening right now. And as the year went on, it became more and more topical, and that's really uncomfortable. Mm. I don't think it's a perfect movie, but I think it's an audacious movie, and I think more people I think it should have gotten a bigger release. It could have been marketed as just another big action movie, and it wasn't.
Right.
The Weinstein stuff
dropped
the ball.
The way it was marketed, I mean, had it been marketed as just another action movie, I likely wouldn't have seen it.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas because it was rolled out so slowly and there was this there seemed to be this mystery behind it, like I was intrigued, so I ended up going to see it. So someone is actually a genius.
Don't give Weinstein any credit. He's giving himself all of it.
I'm sure.
But there was the whole issue of, were they going to cut it? Were they going to add voiceovers? And they didn't, fortunately.
Yeah.
But it was intelligent in all the ways that action science fiction movies aren't usually, and I was very happy for that fact. Also, I like that it ticked off so many people.
Did it tick off people?
There were a lot of people who were very upset about just, I guess, the fact of it.
Okay. Huh.
I had a lot of heated debate with fellow Film Experience.
I think that speaks to its, you know, effectiveness.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that was number three. Number two was Birdman, which we have already talked about.
Yes.
We've talked about on this podcast,
yes,
actually.
Yes, we have. And we also talked about Snowpiercer on the podcast on the Alhazard Balthazar episode.
Good.
So if you want to learn more, if you want more analysis.
If you want to hear me furiously defending all of Birdman's flaws.
I mean, I like it. I like it.
I love how qualified that tone is.
I like it. I had a few, one or two issues.
I mean, I'm not pretending by any means that it's a perfect movie, but it's an audacious movie.
Absolutely. And there's certainly something to be said for that.
Yeah.
And, well, we'll get to that later. But
yes.
Keep going.
All right. And my number one is The Babadook, which is an Australian horror movie that clearly I have a huge affinity for genre film, because I think every one of my movies except one is a genre film. But it's everything. It's more than you ever expect from a horror movie. Like, most horror movies now, it's a very predictable series of jump scares, even the ones that we love and then turn into a gigantic franchise, like Paranormal Activity. It's just a series of jump scares. But The Babadook is actually a really touching, really sad story about how difficult, how one trauma can affect a family, can affect a kid, can affect a mother. If you took the monster out of it, it would still be a really touching story about family. And the monster doesn't even show up until about halfway through the film. And by that time, you're so primed that it actually becomes a very horrifying movie. I slept with the lights on after watching it.
I know. You have said on this show that you are a wimp. How did you make it through the movie?
Watching it with all of the lights on and during the day.
Okay.
And
it's a Sunday morning kind of movie.
Yes, and then put on like the Care Bears or something right after it. It is a genuinely scary movie, but it's scary in the way that like Rosemary's Baby or The Shining is. It takes a long time to build. It takes a long time to create its world, to create its characters. And it spends more time on its human characters than it does on the monster, which is something that horror movies almost never do.
Mm-hmm.
They're so wrapped up in their own mythology. And it's just, it's it's beautifully designed. It's beautifully shot. It does not look like a first-time effort, and that's exactly what it is. It's a first-time effort by the writer-director.
Yeah.
I want to see everything she makes from here on out.
Is that two female first-time directors on your list?
It is. That's exciting. That is not an accident.
That alone is reason to celebrate, right?
Mm-hmm. So I think it's still in theaters, and it's definitely on video on demand, so I suggest watching it during the day. I'm suggesting it to people who don't even like horror movies, because
so
I really...
Do you think I'd like it?
I do. I think it's a really well-made story.
Okay. All right. If I can't sleep for a week, I'm gonna know who to blame.
No.
After you.
That is. I am willing to bear that.
Okay.
I'll watch it with you.
Okay. Yeah.
Yes. Everybody, go watch The Babadook.
Okay.
All right. What are your top five, Lady P?
My top five. Well, number five. There's like a tie for number five, but I'll get to my runners up later. My number five is pretty arbitrary. I went with Ida, the Pawlikowski movie.
Mm-hmm.
I saw My Summer of Love in high school.
Oh,
and
I forgot about that movie.
I hated it. I was in high school, so that could have been a part of it. But I just thought, like, what? This is a shameless Heavenly Creatures ripoff.
That's not a high school thought. That's a movie geek thought.
Yeah, well, guilty as charged. But I actually really liked Ida. It's the story of this young woman who has been living in a convent for most of her life. And she is asked to leave and go rediscover her roots. Takes place in Poland, by the way, and she finds out that she was born Jewish and that her parents, her whole family, were murdered in the war. So she goes and finds her aunt, and they go on a journey to recover the remains. And it's not super cheery, not a cheery, happy movie, but it is beautiful. So snuck in the top five. But like I said, it's really good. It's streaming. You should watch it. And I actually thought it was really pretty. It's black and white photography. Did either of you see it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's on the cinematography shortlist, too,
okay.
For the Oscars.
Okay. My number four is The Grand Budapest Hotel, which is Mr.
Tilda.
Anderson's. Yes.
Tilda. She had a good year. She's on all of our top fives.
Yes.
She's on all of our top fives in one form
is.
Or another. That's fantastic. Sorry.
That is. Forget Shia. This is the year of Tilda.
It is. Let's declare it.
I should say it stars Ralph Fiennes as this hotel manager. I think that's what he does.
Mm.
And it's this weird... what do they call it? Like diorama version of World War II, like in this adorable Wes Anderson world. But just because it is adorable doesn't mean it's not also really emotionally affecting and really beautiful. And the movie kind of snuck up on me. I was watching it. I'm like, oh, well, this is all very cute. And then suddenly I was like really moved. So I guess I'm kind of dense because I was watching the movie, and it took me about a third of the way in to realize it's kind of a manifesto.
Mm-hmm.
So that was one, and that really has stuck with me, despite coming out earlier in the year. So, yay, go Wes Anderson.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. My number three choice is We Are the Best, Lucas Moodysson's Swedish movie about three middle school girls who start a punk rock band in the 1980s in Stockholm. And I don't really have that much to say about it beyond it's just so freaking cute. So cute. I want all of their haircuts. So, yeah, check that out. Available on Netflix. It's just really, really cute.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, Obvious Child. Hey!
Hey, look at that. What are the odds? I was guessing it was going to show up on somebody else's.
Yeah. I don't know. It was so good.
Mm-hmm.
Again, was not expecting much from it. It came out, I want to say, in the summer-ish.
I think it was early summer.
Yeah. And it starred Jenny Slate, who I like, but I know her mostly as the loud and obnoxious girl on Parks and Rec.
She's the worst.
But I don't know, she sort of hit it out of the park with that one.
Mm-hmm.
And also... much has been said this year about the death of the romantic comedy, But I think given how successful Obvious Child was, I don't know if it was necessarily super financially successful, but it was certainly it was a great story, and I do think there's an appetite for more stories like that. The trick to making a good romantic comedy is to have it be, one, romantic, and two, have it be funny. Mm-hmm. And I think they succeeded on both counts with that.
I think so, yeah. Too.
Finally, my favorite movie of the year is Boyhood. Yay. Because I'm nothing if not completely unoriginal. So this made pretty much every best of list this mm-hmm. year. But I was as hypnotized by it as seemingly everybody else who saw it. I thought it was beautiful. And I think when Linklater puts out a movie, generally speaking, it's usually my favorite movie of the year. I think last year he put out Before Midnight, and I think that was my favorite movie of last year as well. So he's got a pretty good track record with me. And yeah, go see Boyhood if you haven't. Mm-hmm. So, all right, so those are our top five. Do we want any honorable mentions?
I think all my honorable mentions
have
were
been
in
covered.
Your list.
Okay.
Yeah, I think mine were too.
Pretty much
I'm
covered.
I'm very impressed by how... This is what I'm talking about, the weird, audacious year for film. It just makes me very happy.
Yeah, well, there's so much variety. Like, I really liked Particle Fever. Mm-hmm. That one was really good.
Oh, that was this year?
That was this year.
I should have put that on my list.
There was Mr. Turner. That one's good.
Israeli film Get.
Get? What is Get?
It's about a woman trying to get a divorce over several years, and it all takes place in one courtroom.
Oh.
I saw it at AFI Fest, and it's heartrending and really incredible. And it's another one of those great examples of how dynamic something can be, even if it's shot in one small space.
I really liked, I'm going to butcher the name, but it's False Mesure, I think is how you say mm-hmm. it. Solid. I wanted more variety in my top five, but that one was just hard to say, so.
Is that why it didn't make your top five? Because you didn't know how to say it? That's amazing. Oh my gosh.
And all right, so that's pretty much, you know, a good mixture of stuff that came out this year. Mm-hmm. What are some things that you didn't see that may have made your top five? If you had a chance. Emma, why don't you start us off?
Okay. Well, there was like one screening of 20,000 Days on Earth that I missed, which is the kind of documentary-ish thing on Nick Cave. And I just love Nick Cave, so I was really excited about that. But I missed it.
Yeah.
The same thing for National Gallery.
Yes.
I think it played for 1 week, which is a documentary about the National Gallery.
That is totally up your alley.
I hear there's like some pretty sweet footage of painting conservation going on in there. So I got to check that. But I also like just sort of like philosophy about institutions and sort of how we pursue human endeavor as a group.
Right.
Mm-hmm. The next one was Jodorowsky's Dune. I think I didn't see that to see something horrible, but I can't remember what it was.
Oh,
and I really regretted it.
I thought you did see it. Wasn't it? I thought you saw that. No. Oh, what did we see? That horrible Jude Law movie.
Oh, yeah.
That was this year. What was that Jude called? Law. Hemingway? Dom Hemingway?
It was my birthday. I wanted to see something fun.
That's true. Fair enough.
Plus, it seemed like that movie was just like totally made for me. Like,
yes.
I like, you know, not necessarily great British gangster movies that are really flashy and have like, you know, Richard E. Grant in them. So
right. Can't go wrong with the Judy Garrett.
Apparently you can.
Well, that's true. The movie was bad through no fault of Richard E. Grant. Let's be clear.
Gotcha.
Nothing is ever Richard E. Grant's fault. And if you need a Richard E. Grant fix, might I recommend Spice World? Anyway, continue.
Oh, you know what? I also didn't put this on my list, but didn't Jodorowsky have a new movie this year?
He did, I think. Or did it come out? I think you had to have been at Cannes to see it, though.
No, it was at the New Art for a week.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And then it was at one of the Lemley movies after that, I think.
Really?
Yeah, it was
That,
you know,
came and went, didn't it?
Yeah.
That's a shame. Like, a lot of people saw the documentary and then nobody saw his actual movie that he did end up making.
My next one was The Girl Walks Alone at Night.
Yikes.
Yes. Oh, man, I wanted to see that. Good year for vampires, too, apparently.
Yes.
Yeah.
A lot of vampire movies
and
TV series.
And my last one was We Are the Best, because
it's adorable.
It just looks great. I didn't put Mr. Turner on the list because I got tickets to see that today.
Okay. Nice. So. Well, one thing I am saying today is on the list because I feel bad that I didn't get to it in time, which is Selma, because I do want to see it. Also, well, she's not a first time. Ava DuVernay is not a first time. She's her third movie. I don't remember the names of them, but it was like $200,000 movies. And then like, here, let us hand you this multimillion-dollar
movie. Would you like to work with Oprah?
Actually, Oprah came on to it later.
Okay.
I love that. Would you like to work with Oprah? I actually met her, and she's not Oprah. I did not meet Oprah. I met Ava DuVernay.
So impressed.
And she's amazing, and really intelligent. Had been out for 48 hours when I met her. So like, girl, I hope she slept.
Yeah.
But so that is not the reason why Selma is very high on my wish I had seen it list. It's very high because I don't like biopics as a general rule. Mm-hmm. I think that they all follow a very predictable cycle.
Yeah.
But I like ones that narrow in on one specific event and look at it from multiple angles. And that seems to be what Selma is. So I'm looking forward to seeing it. We Are the Best was also on my list. Nightcrawler was on my list. What else was on my list?
You Boyhood. Freaking love We Are the Best.
I'm so excited to see it. Yes. I probably will go home after Selma and be like, you know what? What I really need right now, I really need punk teens in my life right now.
Yes.
Let's watch some teenage dirtbags.
Yes.
Nightcrawler's on my list. Boyhood is on my list. I'm very ashamed that I haven't seen it yet.
To watch Boyhood.
I know. Is there
Do
anything?
Not have an extra 3.5 hours to spare to watch? I don't think it's actually that long.
Last time I had an extra 3.5 hours to spare, I watched Lawrence of Arabia.
Okay. Also a good choice.
But considering how much I've seen it, maybe not the best choice. Leviathan is on my list.
Yes.
A Girl Walks Alone at Night is on my list. So there's a lot that I still have to catch up on is the point.
Yeah, I think maybe we should have waited a day to do this podcast.
Do you think it would be a mistake to, like, if you really didn't have time to watch Boyhood in, like, three chunks?
I am so opposed to doing that, generally speaking. That is pretty episodic. But that being said, it's also really fun to watch the way that the film transitions between years. So I do, if you can, sit down and watch it for 3 hours, if that's not a possibility, and you're not someone who needs to sit and watch the whole thing at once, then I suppose it's better than not watching it.
Mm-hmm.
My need to sees are 2 days, one night.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Selma also. I really want to see Selma. Listen Up, Philip. I really wanted to watch that. I mean, I'm sort of tired of the neurotic New Yorker guy, but I heard that one was good, and it I don't know. Who knows? The Guest.
Oh, yeah.
I want to see The Guest. Yeah. Starred Up. That was another one that came out earlier in the year that I really wanted to see. Didn't get a chance to see. And also, Goodbye to Language. Why did nobody screen that in Los Angeles? I guess it's going to come.
What is it?
It's Jean-Luc Godard's new movie.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
Hopefully we will get a chance.
Does he get subtitles this time?
How much of a fuss is he going to put up? We'll see. I don't know. I assume so. A lot of people did see it, but it's mostly just critics. It's Jean-Luc Godard's 3D movie.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, when it comes out, we'll probably talk about it on the podcast.
I'm thinking about what a 3D Godard movie would look like, because like his stuff is usually really two-dimensional, so is it going to be like a cross-section of something, but then like it pops out?
No, I think that's totally what it's going to be.
The trailer I saw of it involved a lot of shooting through gates.
So it's more like Harold and Kumar's Christmas then? I'm sorry, that's the best 3D movie I've ever seen.
Somewhere Godard just had a shiver go down his spine and he doesn't know why. Because somebody just compared his movie to Harold and Kumar Godot, I guess.
All right, on that note.
Sorry.
Favorite television shows. Yay, Emma.
Well, I actually spent most of this year watching all of, what's the name of it? The Sopranos.
That's perfect.
Catching up.
But, I did see True Detective this year.
Yeah.
Which I'm sure is on everybody's top list.
Nope.
Well, I don't mean you two.
It's
on everybody's. No, it's on almost everyone's top lists.
Aside from like all the huge problems with it, it's pretty easy to love. I really liked Transparent. I just binge watched all of them in one sitting, actually, because I thought it was that good. We had an early day at work. So,
yeah. Yeah.
Well, they're all like 25 minutes or 22 or something like that. So it was, just, you know, it was like a really long movie.
Yeah, no, I know that. I'm just thinking of all of that, like, all of that existential crisis crammed into one viewing session. I had to split it up.
I picked Orange is the New Black, which I'm sure is also on the list.
We're fist pumping, just FYI.
And then I picked Broad City.
Yeah.
Nice.
I don't know if that was, like, got enough attention.
It should have.
I don't think there's enough buddy comedies about girls.
Yeah.
Damn straight.
Yep.
And I related to those characters a lot more than a lot of women I've seen on TV or film. So
yeah.
I appreciated that.
Yep. Is that it?
That's it.
All right.
That's a good list.
That's a good list.
Oh, and The Sopranos is great if you haven't heard.
There's this FYI. Little show. There's this little show called The Sopranos. You might have heard of it.
Anne-Marie, favorite shows.
There's a lot of crossover here, because I also started off with Transparent, which I talked about on this podcast, and I've talked about it to a lot of people. I will continue talking about it. I think it's fantastic.
Yeah.
Last Week Tonight with John Oliver.
Okay.
Because it's this strange combination of, not strange, it's this perfect combination of all of the things that the Colbert Report and The Daily Show are supposed to do of, like, you know, poking fun at topical humor, but also really good investigative journalism. Like, the bit that he did on net neutrality, I sent it to all of the people who kept asking me what net neutrality was, and I was like, this is why it matters.
Yeah.
And it was a great explanation of it. So not a genre or a subject that I thought was going to be neat. Like, I did not think we needed another political commentary comedy show, but it worked great. Orange is the New Black season 2 is also on my list.
Yay!
Because talk about diversifying, it was great. It expanded on its characters really well, and I loved all of them. Mm-hmm. And then Legend of Korra is in my top 5.
Okay.
Does anybody else watch it?
I haven't seen it, but it's on my list.
Okay.
Yeah.
The reason I put it on my list is because so few people are talking about it, and I want more people to talk about it because it ended up being a streaming show. Nickelodeon yanked it from airing because they didn't know what to do with this very adult show for kids. But that's exactly what it was. The fourth season, it was the last season, just wrapped, was about, you know, the is anybody familiar with the Avatar series at all?
I mean, not really.
Okay, Emma's the Avatar series was on Nickelodeon. It was a small child who's going to save the world through his elemental powers. It was first 4 seasons. Great show. They did a spinoff, which was Legend of Korra, which is kind of like the Doctor. There's always a new Avatar, except it's like the Dalai Lama, basically. Spirit enters into a new body. And so Korra was the next one, who is an Inuit-ish young woman.
Mm-hmm.
So it became about basically a black teenager, which is something you don't see a lot on TV, not something you see a lot in cartoons at all. And from that, this season especially was like about, let's talk about what weapons of mass destruction are like. Let's talk about arms races. Let's talk about war. Let's talk about how dictatorships are formed.
Yeah.
Like all
this
of this
is a kid's show.
This is a kid's show tackling really, really big issues. And then the cherry on the top of the sundae, the thing that was absolutely the coolest thing about it is that it then ended with its main character walking off into the sunset with another girl.
Wow.
So,
all right.
Canonical, bisexual, person of color on a kid's cartoon.
All right.
I was sitting there, like, punching my roommate, going, do you see this? Do you see what's happening right now? We can't even get that on network TV. It's happening on a kid's show. So, that made me extremely happy. But it's a really well-crafted show. And the fight scenes are awesome, which you need in a kid's show. Anyway, check it out.
I've heard good things.
Yep.
Yes.
And then my last one is Jane the Virgin, which maybe shouldn't be so high on the list considering it's so new. It just bumped off Broad City, actually, because I think Broad City needs more talking about. And it's, like, got 8 episodes, Jane the Virgin does, but it's on the CW. It's never what I expect. That's the theme of the year, is things that surprised me that I didn't expect to love as much as I did. And it's like telenovela, but it's also poking fun at it. And so, like, every time it does a genre cliche, like, let's throw the woman in jail or let's throw the woman into the loony bin because she's lying, except she's not lying. It's like such a bad cliche, but they keep spinning it in new ways.
Yeah.
And so I love watching it.
Okay. Another one that I keep hearing great things about.
It's never what you expect.
Okay.
Also,
I'm going to have to watch that.
I would like to point out that 4 of my 5 are female and very, very queer.
Yeah.
Such a good year for TV that I could do that.
Speaking of queer, my favorite is Orange is the New Black.
Yeah!
Orange is the New Black is my favorite thing, maybe ever. Probably not ever, but it's my favorite thing of the year. I don't know. I had a whole podcast about it. I don't know if anything else needs to be said. While I did prefer season one, season two was also excellent. Could have used just a touch more Alex Voss. Just like a touch.
And Sophia. Touch more Sophia.
Just a touch more Sophia. That would have been good. Maybe mm-hmm. next season. But we got a lot more Poussey, which I'm a big fan of.
I love you, Samira Wiley.
And I'm contractually obligated to mention Kate Mulgrew every single episode. So.
Oh my God, she's amazing in it.
So, I mean, really everything else for me was like, like there was Orange is the New Black and there was everything else. That being said, let me just echo some of the things that other people have mentioned. I really liked Transparent. I don't think I liked it as much as everybody else seems to. Partially, I'm just going to throw this out there. I feel like maybe we need to talk more in depth. Maybe there needs to be a Transparent special. I do not like the way that Shelley is portrayed.
Which one's Shelley?
The mom.
Interesting.
I do not like her.
Is it that it you feels, don't like the character or you don't like how the
I don't like the way the character is portrayed. I do not like the performance at all. I feel like it's a very subtle show and everyone else is doing very subtle work. And Judith Light is very, very broad. This is like Jewish Mother 101. And I know I'm the only one. Huh. I've never read anything other than the highest of praise for her performance.
Huh.
And it could just be me.
No, I think you've actually got a point there.
I don't think it's like super cliched though.
You don't?
Like,
she's got a big jar of mustard.
I know.
But is that a Jewish mother thing? I'm asking as a
no, exactly. That's what I'm thinking. Is like I think if you're not Jewish, like maybe like the Jewish jokes weren't like super like, right. Oi, what am I, chopped liver? Like yeah. I thought that they were actually things that you like maybe your Jewish grandparents did. Yeah. Like her character and Jeffrey Tambor's character reminded me so much of my Jewish grandparents.
Okay, that could be.
They did work really well together.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's true. I don't know. It's just I've been around a lot of Jews in my life. And, well, there is this focus on food, that's for sure. Most of them aren't... I just don't think most of them hassle you the way that Shelley hassles her kids. I mean, it's just... I could get into it. It just it felt very, very broad, like very stereotypical Jewish mother. And that it felt like tonally off to me. But that being said, it's a really, really good show. And I totally enjoyed watching it, that performance aside. And I feel bad because everybody else is so on board with her. So...
It's also a good year for Gabby Hoffman.
It is a yeah. really good year for Gabby Hoffman.
Gabby Hoffman
yes.
just popped up on both of our top movies and our top TV series with Obvious Child. Obvious, and with,
yeah, exactly.
She was on Girls, too.
And on Girls, exactly. Yeah.
I didn't see the season of Girls. That's why it wasn't on my list.
I did, but it didn't end up on my list. It's not a bad
it's
season.
It's not as good as season two.
It's not that. It's just that there was a lot of really good television this year.
All right.
My third... is Broad City.
Yeah.
Super good. I don't feel like anything else needs to be said. It's just really funny.
Yep.
And then rounding that out, I mean, most of the TV I watched was stuff that came out way before. So I can't, it's hard for me to keep track of what exactly came out this year. But I watched a lot of RuPaul's Drag Race.
Yes!
go Team Bianca.
Was that this
I'm kind of Tana Alaska.
I love Alaska. Well, I love Jinx. I love Alaska. I love Bianca. I love Ben de la Creme. I love a lot of them. So we got a lot of good drag queens.
And the world is a better place for it. RuPaul is pretty fabulous.
Yes. And then I guess to round out the top five, I'll go with Inside Amy Schumer.
Oh yeah. Nice choice.
Yeah, she's a really funny lady. There's a lot of good stuff on Comedy Central. There's a review, there's Key and Peele, Inside Amy Schumer, Broad City. So you really can't go wrong. They're doing a good job over there.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
The McDonald's Aaron Sorkin sketch was my absolute... Like, if we were doing favorite sketches of the year, that might be my favorite sketch of the year, is the McDonald's Aaron Sorkin thing.
Yes.
It's such a perfect takedown of that very specific style that Sorkin has.
Yes.
And self-important style.
Exactly. All right, well, on that note,
sorry favorite, for that tangent.
Favorite performances. I'll just shout out the categories and you can tell me if you've got an answer.
Okay.
Best actor. It can be in movies or television. I don't care.
Oh, it could be both?
Could be either.
TV's Jeffrey Tambor. Okay. Gonna continue to shill for Transparent until I drop.
It's
also
really good.
Because I know that the Emmys are gonna hand it off to Modern Family again, and I'm very pissed. Because Modern Family is not as good as everybody keeps giving it awards
this
for being.
Bizarre.
Anyway, actor, I'm going with Michael Keaton in Birdman, although okay. I don't know if that's actually my final choice. What about you?
I really like Timothy Spall in Mr. Turner.
Nice.
Joaquin Phoenix in Inherent Vice was really good. He continues to impress me. Like, I never liked him when he was in Gladiator and stuff like that.
ever since
Her, I've been really impressed. And, like, he was so good in The Master. So I feel like he's displaying this great range. Like, he's very demure in Her, and then in The Master, he's, like super wound up. And then in Inherent Vice, he's got this, like, good comedic timing. So I'm impressed. So those are my two. Emma, you got anything?
Well, I didn't put any thought into this, so I'm just going to say Tilda Swinton for everything that she's ever done, especially
best
this
actor.
Tilda Swinton's on my list when we get to it.
Best actor, best actress, best supporting actress.
Yeah.
Did she play a man this year? I don't remember.
You know, her character in Snowpiercer was written for a man.
Okay.
I did not know that, and that is awesome. God damn it. Tilda Swinton, alien princess of my heart.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Alien queen of my heart.
And best actress. I think we know who that is.
Actually, I have a different one for best actress.
Yes.
Rosamund Pike for Gone Girl.
Okay.
Oh.
Cool.
Gone Girl, the movie I liked but didn't love, but I think that her performance holds up the movie. Like, it's a better movie because of her.
Okay.
And I think that is the kind of performance that you should reward, is a performance that makes a movie better.
All right. Well, once again, Kate Mulgrew.
when she got beaten by the Slock. My heart broke for her.
Yeah. Scarlett Johansson, really good in lots of things this year.
True. Good year for Scarlett.
Really impressed with Under the Skin.
Mm-hmm.
And she was even pretty good at Captain America.
Captain America was another one that was better than it deserved to be.
Yeah, it wasn't great. It was a little bit of a mess, but I thought she was good. I want a Black Widow movie.
We're not going to get one.
No.
Why not?
Because Marvel is...
Come on, Marvel.
Marvel is giving us, I don't know, Carol Danvers instead.
Well, it's not going to lose money. Just make the movie.
I know.
So, yeah, those are my two. Up for really all of the ladies of Oranges. I don't want to leave anybody out. They're all stars.
Uzo Aduba broke my heart at the end of the season.
I know.
Crying over the stupid gummy bears. not fair.
Everybody
is great.
Everybody's good. And I don't know if...
Are we on supporting now?
We'll do supporting just because I feel like Patricia Arquette was kind of both. I didn't feel like... Maybe it was just because she kind of steals the movie, but she is so good in Boyhood. Mm-hmm. And that's a hard role to play because to play the same character over 12 years, but to only do it for 2 weeks at a time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can't really get into a groove. You have to, you know, come back in a year and still and find that place again. And there is a continuity throughout. And she's just really good in it. So it's my supporting actress.
I think... Tilda!
I'm sorry.
Okay, I'm actually torn because on the one hand, yes, Tilda. And there's a lot of good Tilda. And I, honest to God, I mean, if we're talking about Oscars, I don't think the Oscars ever know what to do with her in a lead role. Mm-hmm. So, like, the colorful supporting roles that she had this year would absolutely be something that they would pay attention to.
Yeah.
As opposed to, like, we need to talk about Kevin, where she was incredible, but everybody just kind of, like, took a far step away from it.
Yeah.
But while you were talking, I thought of another one, too, and now I'm torn. Because I really loved Jessica Chastain in A Most Violent Year.
Okay.
It was another one of those, like, every time she popped up, the movie just got better.
Okay. I still haven't seen that.
It's pretty great. She's channeling a lot of, like, Michelle Pfeiffer-ish feelings.
I like Michelle Pfeiffer.
Since it's a 1981 movie, is kind of perfect for that thing. And, yes.
Michelle Pfeiffer's having a good year, even though she wasn't in anything. But she was mentioned in two songs.
She was mentioned
being
a
really
lot.
Hot.
I mean, they're not wrong.
It's true.
I miss Michelle Pfeiffer.
Yeah.
Bring back Michelle Pfeiffer.
Bring back Michelle Pfeiffer.
In 2016.
The hip-hop artists are clamoring, Michelle.
Come back to us.
I did want to mention one other supporting actress from Ida. Her name, it's Polish. Hang on.
You got it.
Agata Kulesza.
Nice.
I think that's how she says it. But she plays the aunt in Ida, and every time she's on screen, I was, again, just totally, totally transfixed. I don't know. Like, she's just kind of spellbinding in this really interesting way. And I'm always doubly impressed when I don't speak the language and I'm impressed by the performance, because so much is conveyed through dialogue. But she managed to do it almost exclusively through her face and through gesture. So that's pretty impressive. Best supporting actor.
Oh, I got one.
Okay.
I'm going to pick Chris O'Dowd in Calvary.
Okay. All right.
I'm a big fan of his. Yeah. But yeah, he's really great in Calvary.
Okay.
Cool. J.K. Simmons in Whiplash.
Okay.
Which is a movie that I didn't actually enjoy as much. Like, everybody's clamoring about it, but I don't generally enjoy movies that have a very specific idea of, like, the lone male genius. Mm-hmm. Bugs me as a genre.
Yeah.
And I don't think Whiplash, like, has this very masculine idea of how success works, and I don't think it examines or deconstructs it as much as people are giving it credit for.
Okay.
That being said, J.K. Simmons is incredible in it and terrifying in it, and I just want him to do, like, I want his star to rise a little bit more, because I feel like people too often stick him in character roles and then forget about him.
Yeah.
So.
You know, even if you did think that was the greatest movie, though, if you enjoyed watching it, there might be something wrong with you.
Yeah, sadomasochistic movie. Like, really, really is. But
okay, also, I thought it was really funny that, like, this car insurance spokesperson was in this movie called
that's
Whiplash.
That's what I'm talking about, though. Like, that's what I'm talking about, though. Like, he's the car insurance guy, or he's the editor in Spider-Man, or, right. like, all the... But he really is obviously a right. very great actor, so... Right. This is one of those things where I want to boost the signal for him a little bit more so yeah. that he can...
Well, he's probably going to get the Oscar this year, so... My supporting actor is... I feel like I should transition better than that, but I'm just going to do it anyway. My best supporting actor is Josh Brolin in Inherent Vice.
Hmm.
He plays like a button-up, straight-laced cop guy, super macho, and it's about him kind of unraveling a little bit in these really funny ways.
I haven't seen it, but yeah. I can see him based on my reading the book in that character. And every time I see the trailer, I'm cracking up at the Moto Pancake yes. thing.
That was really funny. For that scene alone. Mm. And also, Ethan Hawke in Boyhood was so good.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, okay. I'm going to throw out some categories.
Okay.
Favorite shameless cash grab?
The Lego Movie.
The Lego Movie. Mine is also The Lego Movie.
Mine was, but I thought I should mention Maleficent as well, which was not a perfect movie by any measure.
Oh, I hated that movie
but
so much.
I didn't see any, like, of the... I was, like, really excited to seeing some, like, you know, summer movies, and they were all sequels that I didn't want to see.
Yeah.
So I saw Maleficent with my dad, and we had a great time.
Yeah.
I think my problem with it was that I watched a lot of Once Upon a Time right before I went into it, and I was like, this is just, like, a bad C-plot on Once Upon a Time. I didn't need to make this into a blockbuster.
Okay.
That was my problem with it.
I didn't see very many Hollywood blockbusters, and those that I did see... wasn't that impressed with. I do want to give sort of a shout out to Interstellar, because while I'm not a huge Nolan person, in fact, I've been pretty vocal about my dislike of Christopher Nolan on this show, there is something to be said for a big spectacle movie that aims to be more than just a big spectacle. And I think that movie was. And while it wasn't always successful, I think its central message was good and interesting. So, yeah. Go Nolan. Sexiest movie. This is the People magazine category.
Can I write something down for this?
It could be really anything. It could be Lego Movie. If you
I have
that
a question
sexy.
Mark next to mine. I don't. Are we like literally sexy movie?
Yeah. Well, like, not a porn. Your favorite porn, Emma.
I didn't see any of the big ones this year.
You didn't see any big porn movies
no.
this year. Well, mine is only Lovers Left Alive, because holy crap.
Very good-looking pale people.
Yes. That's just, like, I walked out of that movie going, that's not fair. You can't hoard all the pretty.
I'll just agree with you.
Okay, only Lovers Left Alive, sexiest yeah. movie of the year. Bess Anderson offering. Did you guys see both? Okay.
No.
Didn't see Inherent Vice?
But I have a feeling I'm going to pick Grand Budapest Hotel.
Okay.
I'm picking Grand Budapest.
I have a feeling it's going to be a hard decision for me, though.
Yeah, they're both really good. And obviously Grand Budapest made my top five, so an Inherent Vice did not. But they're both really good. And any year with two Anderson movies can't be all bad, right? Like,
yep, that's true.
Also, Inherent Vice, best trailer of the year?
It was a good trailer.
It's a really good trailer. I know, I just threw that out there. Did anyone have any favorite trailers? Are we sick of trailers? Is there trailer fatigue?
I saw the trailer for Only Lovers Left Alive, I got like super excited about the movie. So
good trailer. Do we want to do favorite sci-fi?
I'm also on my top five.
Okay. Yeah. See top five.
Snowpiercer.
Snowpiercer. I really, as I said, Under the Skin was really good. Mm-hmm. I liked Coherence, which was this tiny movie. That's available for streaming on Amazon. I watched it, one, because I heard it was good, two, because I will watch anything that a Buffy alum is in. So I was not expecting Nicholas Brendon to have the best year out of all the Buffy alum. Allison Hannigan had a show go off the air, sort of peter out, and then Sarah Michelle Gellar had a show canceled. Aww. So... score one for the underdog, I guess.
Yeah.
I appreciate these categories you come up with, like best Anderson, best Buffy alum.
Yeah. Best Buffy alum. He also showed up on one episode of Faking It, which has nothing to do with anything. But
I heard
just
that
like,
one was good.
Faking It?
Yeah.
Faking It is surprisingly good. Okay. Another one of those ones where it's like, this premise pisses me off, but then it actually became a good show.
Okay.
Also, Laverne Cox is on one episode, and she's amazing.
Yay!
On it.
All right, now I have to watch. Okay, most overrated.
Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yes! Yeah. I was worried that was going to be one of your favorites.
No, okay. It was not one of... Okay, I will say this. It was pretty. All of my complaints about color in movies had no problem when there was a giant pink background behind the main characters. But no, it was funny, and that's great. And I think the reason that people reacted to it the way that they did is because the superhero genre has inexplicably become so weighty and so heavy.
Right.
But no, it was not the great film that everybody thought it was. The characters were not very well drawn. You're the most like well-rounded character was a CGI raccoon that talked, and a CGI tree that had three lines or three words, and it just really irritated me that people kept like lauding it for all of these things that it didn't actually have. It was cliche ridden to a T. It was fun and it was funny, but let's not turn it into something that it's not.
Right Emma.
Seeing the, what do you call them, Golden Globe nominations, I had to pick The Imitation Game.
Okay.
Because I just saw that the other week, and I was like, jeez. <Come on.
laughs> okay, I still haven't seen it, but I think it's safe to assume that all of those biopics are probably somewhat overrated.
It was just a total biopic.
Yeah.
Which, if you like those, I would say it's not the worst movie ever.
Okay. So. I also, my blockbuster overrated one is Guardians of the Galaxy. I didn't even think it was funny. There was really nothing about that movie that I liked. And just to, like, extra piss me off, they added a girl fight. Like, come on.
For give like
me
30
a break.
Seconds.
Yeah, give me a break. And I hated that they were purposefully playing off of our memories and our sentiment and the earned sentiment that we feel for Iron Giant and use that, try and just like transplant that into this cheap, stupid movie that didn't earn it at all. And I so resented it for it.
Okay, I don't have quite the grudge against it that you
do. Okay,
okay.
But as far as prestige pictures go, I really didn't like The Immigrant.
Mm-hmm. Really?
Yeah, did not like that movie. God, I thought it was so maudlin, and it felt like something we'd seen before a lot. Like that immigrant story felt so unremarkable. I thought Joaquin Phoenix was really bad in it, which is funny because he's also one of my best actors of the year. So. And I am not as taken with Marion Cotillard as everyone else seems to be. So, yeah, that's pretty much... I heard all these great things, and I think that was another botched Weinstein release. And so there was this hype surrounding it, and when I finally watched it, it just didn't live up to it at all. But maybe someone else can explain why it's so great. It was pretty. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But I hope that doesn't take away any attention from other more deserving films. In review, do we want to do our takeaways or our most looking forward to in 2015 first?
Doesn't matter.
Okay.
What's your takeaway?
My takeaway. Okay. I guess we sort of already touched on this, but it was a really good year for female protagonists.
And I'm fist pumping again.
Yes. both on the big screen and on television, and not only on screen, but also behind the scenes. There were a lot of television shows that were created by women. We're very, very fervent in our support of Orange is the New Black and Transparent, both of which were created by women. And Obvious Child, The Babadook.
The Babadook.
The Babadook. Girl Walks Home Alone at Night, all directed by ladies. That was a big takeaway for me. And then also, we also mentioned magical realism. This was a good year for magical realism. We got Birdman, which I agree. I would like to see more magical realism employed in that way. And also, The One I Love.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Yeah, I forgot about that movie.
Yeah. And Transparent, oddly enough. Some magical realism in there, too.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's kind of... Those are my thoughts on the year. I think... Overall, generally pretty good year.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty solid. Not, as we say, not for humanity, but for the arts. How about you guys? Emma.
Too many sequels.
Too many sequels. Amen. Too many freaking sequels.
It's only going to get worse.
Oh my God. All right. Emery.
I agree that it was a good year for female directors. It felt like a good year for representation in general, like especially on TV. Yeah. Like the number of queer characters and people of color like seemed to double almost overnight or over a year, which was pretty incredible. But it seems like a transition year in so many ways, because this was the year that a lot more people started saying, oh, I didn't catch it, but I'm watching it on video on demand.
Yeah.
This was a year when a movie, for reasons outside of the company's control, ended up on video on demand instead of getting a wide release and ended up making huge amounts of money. So I think this is this feels like a year where Hollywood is finally catching up to how people are watching movies and TV, and as a result, really cool, weird things are getting a lot more attention than they would have before. And that makes me really happy, because that just opens up, you know, more avenues for people to make these weird, quirky, fun, strange movies and TV series that are actually getting attention.
Right, yeah. Well, here's hoping.
Here's hoping.
And so... Thoughts.
I say that, of course, the year before Star Wars comes
out. Exactly.
So take that with a grain of salt.
Exactly. It's a 2015. We're going to... One last thing. Let's look ahead. What are we looking forward to in 2015 besides Star Wars?
I am genuinely excited about Star Wars, even though I hate the J.J. Abrams Star Treks.
I feel so ambivalent about the whole thing. I'm glad. I'm any excuse to see Carrie Fisher do anything is good. But what if Carrie Fisher wrote the new Star Wars movie? How amazing would that be?
Princess Leia has to move back home because of her, while she's in rehab.
Yes. Why doesn't that exist?
I don't have a generation, baby. Get one.
Anyway, clearly coming in 2016, Postcards from the Edge 2, we are all going to write it and make this happen.
That has three Katharine Hepburn movie references in it, Postcards.
Oh my God. Yes, we need to be best friends with Carrie Fisher. This is our New Year's resolution.
Are we still talking about things that were slated for 2015? We got distracted by a movie that came out in 92. No, that's why I like doing this podcast. It's like, here's this diversion. Let's go talk about Carrie Fisher first.
Exactly. Okay, so Star Wars, the big thing you're looking forward to?
Yeah, that the director of District 9 has a movie coming out.
I'm
excited about that mostly because Ninja from The Entourage has a small part in it. And apparently he drove everybody on the set of it insane. So that's exciting.
Yeah.
And Map to the Stars I'm excited about because I'm a Cronenberg fan. That's weird. I even liked Cosmopolis, so I'm looking forward to this one.
That is love right there.
Yeah.
How about you?
There's one movie that I'm looking forward to in specific, which is Carol. It's the new Todd Haynes movie set in the 50s, based on a Patricia Highsmith book called The Price of Salt. I can see why they changed the title. Starring Cate Blanchett and Rooney Mara and Sarah Paulson. Mm. I love Sarah Paulson. And I just, Todd Haynes period pieces, I am here for.
Yeah.
I am so excited. But just generally, I think 2015 is like the year of Cate Blanchett. She's in five things next year.
Excellent.
And one of them is Carol, and the other one is Cinderella.
Right.
And, wait, hold on.
I will watch both.
Knight of Cups, the new Malick film.
Oh, that was my pick.
Yeah, so I'm looking forward to the year of Blanchett.
Yes.
And also I'm looking forward to Freeheld, which is the Julianne Moore, Ellen Page movie.
Okay.
Because
I like both those ladies.
Yay.
So just a couple of releases. Ricky and the Flash, the new Meryl Streep movie.
Oh, yeah. The one where she makes out with Rick Springfield.
Screenplay, Diablo Cody, and I really liked Young Adult. So, and it's directed by Jonathan Demme. Hopefully will be good. Knight of Cups, new Malick, you know, but it'll obviously be worth checking out.
Mm.
And there's the new Tina Fey and Amy Poehler movie.
I forgot about that. Yeah,
Sisters. So those are the ones looking over the big list that I'm most excited about. Also Star Wars maybe, and also kind of the Avengers.
Next Avengers.
And I'm also mostly just looking forward to catching up on all the stuff that I missed this year.
Mm-hmm.
January tends to be movie dumping ground, so it affords a good opportunity to catch up on all the stuff that I missed. So, and looking forward to doing more podcasting. Hey!
Hey!
And that's the way we frame it, flicks-wise, that is. Listeners, do you have any other time capsule categories you'd like to suggest? Leave us a comment on our website, flickswise.com. Who rocked the mutton chops harder in 2014? Timothy Spall or Joaquin Phoenix? You can weigh in on our Facebook page, facebook.com/flickswise. You can tweet me. You can tweet at me. You can tweet me. You can do whatever on Twitter. The handle is @flickswise. And if you're a New Year's resolution kind of person, make sure to resolve to leave FlixWise a good rating on iTunes. That can be your first good deed of 2015. You do want to be a good person, don't you? On our next show, we're going to have special guest film historian Joseph McBride on to talk about Sunset Boulevard and the upcoming Orson Welles retrospective at the Film Forum. I know we're jumping around a bit on the sight and sound list, but since it's the first movie of the year, I want to make sure we get started on the right foot. Until next time, Anne-Marie, better get started on that Year with Betty series.
No.
Emma, the next great American art movement isn't going to start itself.
So much pressure.
I don't say to that.
That you're going to go out and start it right now.
Okay, well, it was a pleasure being here.
All right, yeah. Good luck with that, guys.